Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. Good morning and welcome back to Happy Hour with another edition of the show here on 92.9 WBPM.
We've got Jonna Spilbor, we have Carol Pesci and myself. And ladies, I hope you're enjoying your morning and it's warmed up a little bit, which is kind of nice. And Jonna, I'm going to give you the heads up.
What?
Apparently somebody has come up with a new AI program that could warn you when your spouse or your better half is in a bad mood.
Get out.
I'm not kidding you. And apparently they've tested it on 34 different couples. 79% accuracy so far.
Wait a minute. It's an app?
It's not an app form yet.
It's probably a mood ring. What? Oh, please.
It's not a mood ring.
How about, I know what it is. It's when you get hit in the eye with a heavy object, you know your spouse is in a bad mood.
There you go. That's,
well, then that's 100% accurate.
That's a more heavy-handed AI, but...
No, tell me, what is this AI of which you speak?
Well, apparently it says... It works by listening to the pitch and tone of your voice, like just now, for instance. It would note that you're being agitated.
Does it tell you the percent of the time you're in a bad mood, too?
And it would tell you that you sound like the Penguin from Batman. Okay? Mm-hmm. And it detects how your vocal patterns change throughout the day. So basically, it'll detect your vocal patterns, and it kind of gives whoever the... I'm going to assume, in this case, it gives the guy the heads up... to either run away or walk on eggshells.
This could save some marriages.
We could fake this out. We could start talking like this when we're really pissed off.
This isn't a safe quote ad. Oh. Okay.
This could save marriages and boost sales of flowers because guys can get the text or getting ready to leave work on your way home. Dude, you got to stop somewhere. She's in a mood.
Do you understand the problem? Assuming that your voice is naturally going up when you're in a bad mood. I mean, it's because it's, if your voice changes, how is it changing to detect what kind of mood
maybe
you're in?
Maybe it senses teeth clenching.
What if it senses your tongue getting thicker?
Well, then it's just going to tell you that you have an allergic reaction to something.
Right. And it's going to call 911.
Exactly. And you better hope you have one of those.
I don't think there's anything to this.
Well, it says 73% accuracy. Isn't that what
it said? They've tested it on 34 different couples, and it can detect signs of conflict with 79% accuracy, according to this, and some of their test subjects so far.
You know why this is bogus? Because you'd have to know the couples before there was any signs of trouble, and then take their voice.
I just want you to know that when I saw the headline, the very first and only person I thought of was me.
And as soon as they start advertising that on Facebook, I'll be buying 6 different versions of it because I'm a sucker.
Your staff will.
Yeah. She's on the warpath today, kids.
Yep. Well, we got the text.
Yes, they installed it in Alexa. I asked them, how's Jonna doing? Alexa, how's Jonna today? Run! Okay.
What will they think of next? That is kind of funny. Of course, that has nothing to do with what I wanted to complain about today.
Well, feel free. Go ahead. Complain away, girlfriend.
All right.
Because it brings us great joy.
It does.
Since when? Okay. Here's what happened. I went to Atlantic City to have a little fun. Did I tell you guys I was going last week? Maybe I did.
You did not.
I saw your Facebook posts about it.
Just went to Atlantic.
No, you texted me how much you were winning.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was being obnoxious about it.
Go figure.
I was texting Carol every time I won $5 on a slot machine. I'm on fire.
Look what it's up to.
Anyway, so I went there to have a good time. And mission accomplished. But I was out to dinner. I can't even remember what the name of the place was, but it was just a sushi restaurant in one of the casinos. Fun, nice. Have a good time. Get the bill. And on the bill, there was a $2.49 charge. For what, pray tell?
Care to guess? For your seat.
Care to guess? No.
Your attitude.
No, that would have been much more expensive.
Yeah, I was just going to say, $2, that's nothing. John is in a good mood if it was only $2.
This was the first time I've ever noticed being charged a, quote, luxury tax, end quote.
Did you never play Monopoly?
And that's what I said. I said, does anybody have a get-out-of-jail-free card? Because that's the only other time I've ever noticed a luxury tax is when I'm playing the game of Monopoly and I am the thimble or the top hat.
Oh, I'm always the shoe.
Are you? Mm-hmm. Which one did they do away with? They did away with one of those. I like the wheelbarrow for numerous reasons. Anyway, anywho, so now I said to myself, self, what have we always been getting charged a luxury tax and we just never noticed it? Like, I don't go over the bill with a fine tooth comb. So then I looked up luxury tax for the slow. I'm like, when is a luxury
because
tax appropriate?
$2.49 is really going to affect you, so it was worth investing the time to go research and find out what it is.
I realize it's a small amount, but
it's the principle of the thing.
A luxury tax is only supposed to be a tax on, quote, luxury items. So my question to you two is, since when is food considered a luxury item?
Or
because
is,
that's what it was on.
Or is it a luxury tax for the fact that you are in a casino? That anything does any bill in there come with an additional luxury tax?
Hang on a minute. That was the only place I went out to dinner. But if you're charging me a luxury tax, isn't that not reflected in the higher price of the actual food to help cover the cost of rent?
No, because the higher charge of the food goes to the business owner. The luxury tax is going to the municipality or the state.
And why do they not collect that from the normal sales tax that always is added on to the price of a dinner bill? Nobody cares.
I don't know.
Well, I think in this particular case, it's not a luxury tax that's tacked on to every dinner order in the entire state. It's probably just there at the casino.
So if you go to dinner at the casino where you're spending more money than you would because you're gambling, and even though you can drink for free, you're not always drinking for free. In fact, you know what? No, that's wrong. I went to two different restaurants there. Didn't keep my receipt. I should have kept them at both and compared whether or not the little pub dinner bill was the same as this sushi place. Like, is it a luxury if you don't have your fish cooked, but it's not a luxury if it is? Like, I don't get it.
If you went to Johnny Rockets for breakfast.
Yeah, I never had a luxury
on the boardwalk
tax.
Would that be luxury?
If you go to the all-you-can-eat buffet, or as my father likes to say, buffet, would you be paying the $2.49 additional as a luxury tax because you're in a casino?
Did you ask anybody this question?
I did not, because as Curly pointed out, it really wasn't worth my time.
But it is, because you are obviously bothered by it, because you have
and
come
and we've invested 7 minutes and 40 seconds in this so far.
And you've come back to us a week later to bring it up again.
because it is bothering me. Now, it's not the amount. It could have been 2 cents. I just want to know where they get off charging you a, quote, luxury tax for food, when food is really not considered a luxury. It's not like I was getting it served inside a Rolls Royce. I was sitting at a table. So I don't get it. And it's one of those things that you could probably protest it. Like, if I said to the server, thanks for great service, great meal, I'm not paying this $2.49. But then again, you know what? You take it off that person's tip. See, then he gets shafted.
You would never shaft a waiter or waitress.
No. I just think, I think it's a scam, is what I'm trying to say.
Who's the governor of New Jersey right now?
I don't know. Ever since, it's not Christie anymore.
He is all I know.
I just don't get it.
I don't know what it's in reference to, but I mean, I've always referred to it as scumbag genius. And I take it all the way back to, you know, the electronic charges on bank cards, on ATMs.
Oh.
That somebody just said, you know what, we can charge them this and we really don't need to explain to them why. We'll just call it an electronic fee and we're going to constantly add to it. We're going to make it a little bit bigger as we go along, but we're going to start with 50 cents. Back in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. We'll start
with
50
cents. What is it now? $5? Like,
if you use like an outside card, or, but I always refer to it as scumbag genius because there really isn't any explanation, but we cannot not have it. We can't get around it.
Well, as a consumer, you need a bank card. You're going to need to access it. Like, you're at their mercy.
Right.
I get it.
But the fact that you are part of the bank and you have deposited the money of your own into the bank, they make their money off of your money. So what they're doing is they're charging you extra for no reason whatsoever.
Wait a minute. That's because, but there's a reason for that, right? You're not going to pile all your money in a shoebox in the closet. You need somebody to babysit your money, and you need to be able to access it when you want to access it. And there's a fee for that.
But the fee is already me depositing my money, because they have now taken the money that I've deposited and they've basically put it into a big pool, and that's how banks work. They make money off of my money. So that's, I'm already paying them.
But I thought the fee only applies if you go to an ATM that's not part of your banking
system. It's just the fact that there is a fee, because there was a time where there wasn't. And then somebody sat at a meeting somewhere and said, you know, boss, we could probably get away with charging every one of our customers 50 cents to use this card.
And they have gotten away with it.
And we'll call it an electronic fee. Mm-hmm. We don't really have to explain it. And they won't have a choice. And then somebody looked at him and said, Bob, you're a scumbag genius.
Is that how it went?
That's how it went.
Well, then you're complaining about the same thing I'm complaining about, because I could go buy sushi in a gosh darn gas station and not pay a luxury tax on it.
Yeah, but you'd be dead the
next day.
Although
you'd never do it.
Oh, God, no.
You'd be on the can in 5 minutes. What are you talking about? Sushi from a gas station?
I would never. I don't even get sushi.
It's like buying an egg salad sandwich from a gas station.
Oh. Or
early
tuna
to talk
salad.
About egg salad.
Anything with mayonnaise is a. Because you know you could die from mayonnaise poisoning.
So it's not mayonnaise, it's mayonnaise?
You could also end a relationship because of mayonnaise.
You could. That's right. And that has happened. That has happened. I'm gonna contact the governor of New Jersey.
Once you find out who he is.
And also, while I'm at it.
Something else petty you want to complain about?
Yeah, I do. While I'm at it, I don't want to pay luxury tax for food, and I don't want somebody pumping my gas. In New Jersey, you cannot pump your own gosh dang gas.
What is your issue with that? Because you don't have to get out of the car?
No, because then you feel compelled to tip somebody.
You have to tip. You don't have to, but you have to.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've never tipped in New Jersey for somebody putting gas in my car. I never knew that was a thing.
You didn't feel compelled?
Never.
To tip the person?
That somebody has provided you a service at the gas pump, whether it is required or not?
Never occurred to me. Ever.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I would like have to go to a confession if I didn't tip somebody at the...
Oh, wow. Yeah. Never even thought why I would do that.
And then it just really ups the price of the gas. Like, the gas there is cheap. But yeah, no. Mm-mm. In fact, I dug through my purse for quarters because I didn't have any small bills because I spent it all on the luxury tax at the casino.
Do you tip the cashier at the grocery store? Wait.
No.
Bad question. Frankenberry, since she never enters a grocery store...
Have you ever considered
tipping the cashier at the grocery store?
No, I have not. But a cashier at a grocery store is the same as a cashier at any grocery store across the country. If you're in this particular state, and what you've grown accustomed to in this state is doing it yourself. So when you go somewhere else and somebody now is doing a particular job for you, that is where you feel the compulsion.
I'll bet you people from New Jersey don't tip. It's only stupid New Yorkers that go down there.
If you go into a coffee shop.
No offense.
People from New Jersey probably don't tip. But, and, you know, they see where your license plate is from. If you go into a coffee shop, not a Starbucks, because I think they have a tip cup in there. If somebody pours you a coffee, not at a diner, do you tip?
Sometimes. If I paid in cash and I got some coins or something, like at Dunkin' Donuts, I will. But if I'm using a debit card, I'm not thinking about it. I'm just, thank you.
The deli I go to in the morning has a little tip jar. I'll throw something in there every now and then.
You will?
Yeah. Thanks for the fine sandwiches.
I'm a tipper. I'm a big tipper. I don't want to pay $2 for a luxury tax.
But I'll add that to your tip, baby.
She'll tip $100 on a dinner out in New York City. And then,
I've done that.
I know you have. And then take note of a $2.49.
And that's another thing. There's no luxury tax in New York City. It must be a Jersey thing. Maybe it's just an Atlantic City thing.
It could be.
It could totally be.
You should Google that.
So now we need to find out who the mayor of Atlantic City is.
And punch him in the neck.
I thought you were going somewhere else with the N.
No.
So, okay. Now, who do we got today, by the way?
Today, we've got a happiness expert that's going to be talking to us.
Unlike the one we have in the room.
This is a topic near and dear to my heart. So we have Tal Ben-Shahar coming up. He has a new book out called Shortcuts to Happiness, Life-Changing Lessons from My Barber. Nice short subhead there
yes,
for you.
Yes, I was
going to
say, I can appreciate that. And Johnny, you can appreciate it because it's shortcuts to happiness. You don't got to take the long way around here.
So this guy's,
boom, you're right there.
This guy's no joke. He's written a few books. I read one of his prior books, and he is he's taught the largest course at Harvard, positive psychology, and the third largest, the psychology of leadership. 1,400 students a semester come to hear what he's got to say. So why don't we come back?
All right, that sounds good. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol, and we've got more on the way. Just stick with us. This is 92.9 WBPM.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And it's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol, and we have returned now for segment number two. And then segment number two, of course, you know, is when we get to our guest. And our guest is going to teach us about happiness today, I guess, a little bit. He's an expert, right? Yeah,
yes, and this just occurred to me. This is kind of funny and kind of tells you what a dork I am. So Jonna is obsessed and would like chase and stalk Bradley Cooper.
Yes, I admit that.
Yeah, so I would like chase and stalk intelligent people that talk about the topic of happiness.
I just chase dumb people.
So we're so happy. On the line with us, we have Tal Ben-Shahar, PhD. He's taught the largest course at Harvard, positive psychology, and the third largest, the psychology of leadership, attracting 1,400 students per semester. Approximately 20% of all Harvard undergraduates. Can you imagine that many students,
brain cells tuning in to our guest.
Yes. For the last 15 years, he has taught leadership, happiness, and mindfulness to audiences around the world. He is the co-founder of the Happiness Studies Academy and author of 6 books, including the international bestsellers Happier, that's the one I have, and Being Happy, which have been translated into more than 25 languages. To learn more, you can visit him at talbenshahar.com. We'll read that again at the end of the interview. Tal, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about your most recent book. You've written other books in the past to, you know, great success. What made you want to write Shortcuts to Happiness? What's different about this?
Yes, so my other books rely heavily on research, on you know, the great thinkers, the great philosophers and psychologists throughout history. This book is about a great philosopher and psychologist who happens to be my barber.
I love it.
And, you know, I just suddenly dawned on me as I was having a haircut that every time I leave, I'm happier than I was when I came in.
Oh.
And I said, isn't this the purpose of psychology? I should write a book about him. And I did.
Oh, wow. And again, when I read that in the introduction, so the subhead is of Shortcuts to Happiness is Life-Changing Lessons from My Barber. So tell us a little bit more about your friend and barber, Avi, who became the inspiration for you to write this book.
Yeah, so he's, you know, he's a person who's formally doesn't have much education, and yet he's one of the wisest people I've ever met. He's always reading and learning, and most importantly, he's always having conversations. So he's learning from his clients as well as teaching. And his lessons are life lessons, you know, how to be happier, how to be more fulfilled, how to deal with issues that you're having, whether it's with your, you know, children or at work or whatever. He has pearls of wisdom for everyone.
I'm interested to get your take on what is going on, because some of the research I did on you that people are less and less happy lately. Mm. What's happening there? What's driving that?
Yeah, so let me show one very interesting study that came out recently. This is Gene Twenge from the University of California, San Diego. And every 5 years, we basically take a measurement of the mental health levels of our youth, of teenagers. And every 5 years, there is a bit of a difference compared to the 5 years before, but nothing significant or major. Well, this time, when they took these measures, It turns out that kids' depression levels have gone up by more than 30%, and suicide levels have gone up by more than 30%. This change is unheard of. We've never seen anything like it. And as she combed through the research, her conclusion was that it's a result of one major change. As she puts it, the ascendance of the smartphone. And specifically what she means is screen time, because we've given up, and this is one of the most important messages that Avi communicates, both by his words, that is my barber, with his words and with his action. Relationships matter, and it's real relationships, not virtual relationships. So if we substitute, you know, that one BFF for 1,000 friends on social media, not a good trade. Or if we spend our time in front of a screen rather than walking around, moving, not a good trade. We need to go back to basics.
And you know, it's funny that you say that, because that is the very first thing I thought of when you had opened this up with, you know, the lessons you've learned from your barber, and it all comes from conversations. And that's, you know, when you think about, you know, you see commercials where people are joking and the kids will look at the parents and say, oh my God, do we have to talk to each other? But you know, that concept,
there's truth in that,
yeah,
though.
That concept is there. Yes, if you're having conversations, that there's more learning in that than there is anything that's on the screen of your, you know, your smartphone.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, this morning I'm working on a curriculum now, so I'm doing a lot of reading and looking at what philosophers had to say throughout the ages. And I was reading René Descartes. René Descartes is considered perhaps the father of modern philosophy. And he wrote hundreds of years ago, he said, you know, I've read a lot, and he was very, you know, he studied Latin and Greek, and he read, you know, thousands of books. And yet he said, in this essay, he said, what I learned most from were two things, other people and looking within myself. In other words, having conversations with other people and having conversations with myself. And these are two things that are lost. And we're not having conversations with people, and we don't have time to look within because we're always distracted.
Yeah, so it's the combination of that problem. And then we've allowed ourselves to become so busy that we think that is the best version of ourselves when we're getting the most things done and we're being most active. And there's an inverse effect there, I think, that by slowing down, you could calm down and be happier, be more connected.
Exactly, by slowing down, by having nothing to do, by being bored. You know, it reminds me, a very close friend of mine is a child psychologist, and she limits screen time for her children for obvious reasons. But then her kids would come to her and say, "Mommy, I'm bored." And her response is always the same. That's okay, sweetheart. Just be bored with dignity.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So this is a really important topic here, because it's not just a quality of life. We're talking about life or not life in some circumstances with the trend of what's happening. So you say that the lack of true relationships, truly connecting with people, is the number one contributing factor to the increased rates of depression in young people as well as suicide. So I want to address this, if we can, from both the standpoint of a young teen or preteen who's listening, as well as the parent of that preteen who might be dealing with depression or anxiety or low self-esteem. Speak to the teen here for a moment, if you will, first, and what advice you have for them.
Yeah, so for the teen, and again, I have teenagers at home, so this is, you know, this is something very personal, obviously. To the teen, what I say is, yes, I know that the immediate attraction is to the screen. The immediate attraction is to dispel that boredom. But that's just a short-term fix. And in the long term, if you want to live a full and fulfilling life, yes, be on the screen, that's okay, but in moderation. And spend much more time, you know, with friends or reading or hanging out with family. And even though it's more of an effort, it's energy well spent.
And just because the masses are doing something doesn't mean it's the right thing either.
It doesn't mean that it's the right thing, though it does make it more difficult, because when we limit screen time, and and here I go to the parent, when we limit screen time, the response is yes, but you know, John's or Jane's parents don't. Why are we doing it? And you know, my response is, you know, when you're a parent, you can choose what to do. But, you know, this is our choice because we care about you. But and, you know, it's not always easy for parents to do that, and especially in today's age.
I think, Tal, this is Jonna, and you mentioned something earlier about we need to go back to basics, and I think there's a bug in that program because when we're talking about kids today, their basics aren't our basics. Like, they grew up in front of the screen. You know,
that
when
is their normal.
Right, they don't know what it's like to take a walk or to stick a playing card in the spokes of your bike so you can hear the click of that going around. They're playing video games from the time they pop out of the womb. So their basics are not our basics. I think in order to do this, in order to have relationships, like, we have to change the programming of today's kids, and I think only the parents can help them do that.
Yeah, I know. It's the parents or, you know, finding help or sending them. You know, there are wonderful summer camps, for example, that go back to basics, you know, where many of them where screens are not allowed. And, you know, for 2 months, the kids have fun, you know, the good old way, where they, you know, they play outside and have conversations late into the night, which is great. But yes, as parents, we have a responsibility. You know, the convenient thing about technology is that we can use it as a babysitter.
Sure, right.
You know, it's inexpensive, and you know, it seems ostensibly like a win-win. It's not. It's not a win-win, and we're exacting a very high price from our children now and for their future. And that means, yes, working with the kids, and it means opening the, you know, Monopoly box and playing together, or having a reading time, or watching quality movies together and then talking about it, or having technology-free meals. You know what I come to call islands of sanity.
I'm writing that down. I love that. Islands of sanity.
One of the other things I enjoyed, I listened to the book, Tal. I didn't read the book. I listened to the book. And one of the little shortcuts you had in there that I especially liked is that sometimes it's okay to just be quiet. Like you talked about getting your hair cut and always having a conversation with the barber, but occasionally you two would both just be silent, and there was some gold in that, for lack of a better word. I appreciated that.
Yeah, you know, there's a wonderful book, one of my favorite books growing up, by Robert M. Pirsig. So he wrote Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, and his second book is Lila. And in Lila, he compares between Native American culture and Western culture. And one of the main ideas there, one of the main differences between the two cultures, is our relationship to silence. We in the West mostly feel uncomfortable and when there is silence, whereas the Native Americans feel very comfortable with it. They can sit around the fire and for 2 hours just be inside themselves. Again, me search rather than research. And, you know, once in a while they look into each other's eyes and then they go back inside and they feel very comfortable with that. And today we know that there is a lot of growth and development in silence. Many of our best ideas come when we're silent. This is, by the way, why it's so important to be bored with dignity, because you become creative when there is no noise distracting you all the time. It's healthier for our mind and for our bodies to experience silence once in a while.
And you know, I've mentioned this to Jonna and Carol in the past. the apartment that I moved into about a year ago has turned out to be possibly the nicest apartment I've ever lived in. And one of the things I've discovered that I enjoy is I spend a great deal of early Sunday mornings doing just that.
Right.
I will end up, I'll find myself getting up at 5 or 6 in the morning, and then before I know it, I am just sitting there on the couch, or I'm sitting in the bed just doing what we were just talking about here, just sitting in silence. And I love it.
Yeah, and again, this is something, unfortunately, we have to relearn, or children have to relearn, because we're so busy filling in every single gap in our day with noise.
That's why I highly recommend only having one child.
No. Or
too late for us. Now you tell me.
Sorry. Tal, what are some of you? And I love the theory, and I love these kinds of big picture discussions. But let's get into some active steps people can take. What are some simple ways, if somebody's feeling down, what are some simple ways that they can boost their mood and as a result, the quality of their life?
Yeah, so here are a few things. The first thing is, you know, find someone to talk to. you know, just a friend, or if you can't find anyone to talk to, write about it. It actually turns out that writing about difficult experiences, feeling down, can go a long way in alleviating the experience. The second thing, though, or maybe the first thing before even writing down, is accept the discomfort or the dis-ease or the pain. You know, one of the I think that the first step to experiencing happiness is to allow in unhappiness.
Oh my gosh. Oh.
We've talked about that on numerous occasions here.
I have to tell you, and I just wrote about this in a book I recently published called Hello Beautiful, to encourage women to show up whole and real and authentic. Mm. And I share my very personal experience of focusing so much on happiness and putting the happy face on all the time. And I feared sadness so much, I worked myself right into a freaking depression. I swear to you, it's the truth. And then when I learned, and I learned that sadness is a valid human emotion. You're not failing at life because you feel sad. So rather than fearing it, rather than fighting it, and as a result giving more energy to it and amplifying it, I allowed space for it. I allowed myself permission to experience it. And now it moves through me much quicker, and I'm overall a much happier person. It sounds like so ironic and makes no sense, and it was my direct personal experience.
Yeah, exactly. And the way it works, and again, this is a topic that I've been thinking about a lot and looking at also from the research perspective, and there are two reasons why allowing in unhappiness actually leads to more happiness.
Wow.
The first is that when we reject painful emotions, what happens is they only intensify.
Mm-hmm.
So if I tell myself, don't be frustrated or don't be angry, then I'll just be angrier and more frustrated and so on and more anxious and so on. So that's the first reason. We only intensify these emotions when we reject them. The second reason is interesting, and that is that we have one emotional system, one pipeline through which all emotions flow. Now, if we block the painful emotions, we don't allow them to flow freely through us, we're also inadvertently blocking the pleasurable emotions from flowing through us. And this was captured beautifully by the ex-Israeli prime minister in the 1970s, Golda Meir, and she said, "Those who cannot weep with their whole hearts cannot laugh with their whole hearts either."
Oh.
Two sides of the same coin, allowing in unhappiness. And then I would also really recommend moving. You know, one of the downsides of being in front of a screen for many hours a day is that we don't move enough, and people at work need to get up every 30 or 40 minutes and move, and we need to exercise on a regular basis, and we need to do it, yes, of course, for physical health reasons, no less so for mental health reasons.
That makes complete sense to me, and I've experienced that personally as well. And I'm going to jump ahead here and predict what you're going to say. I believe so strongly that acts of kindness are one of the fastest ways for us to lift our mood. Is that on one of your list of
to-do list
simple things we can do?
Yes, absolutely. So there's once again a lot of research on that, and my barber told me, which makes it true, that one of the best ways to increase levels of happiness is to help others in some way, whether making them happier or giving, volunteering. My mother tongue is Hebrew, which is the language of the Bible. And my favorite biblical word in Hebrew is the word to give. In Hebrew, it's Natan. Like the name Nathan, in Hebrew, it's Natan. And you would spell it N-A-T-A-N. Now, the interesting thing about this word is that it's a palindrome. It's symmetrical. It can be read left to right or right to left.
Mm.
This is no coincidence. This is ancient wisdom. Ancient wisdom that tells us that when we give, we receive.
Oh.
And today we have a lot of research to show that we increase our levels of happiness more and for longer when we, for example, spend a particular sum of money on others rather than on ourselves when we give.
And even in if you have the means to do that, it's wonderful. You lift your spirits. Your brain actually releases serotonin, which is an antidepressant. But there are so many ways, too, that
exactly.
anybody can give
anybody.
By a compliment or by calling someone or texting someone or walking up to someone would be this whole discussion and thanking them for something you appreciate that they've done for you. Or I mean, because to me, expressions of gratitude are an act of kindness as well.
Exactly. So this is, it reminds me of, again, a beautiful quote by Anne Frank, who said, you can always, always give something, even if it is only kindness.
Yes.
And, my mother, when we were growing up, she would often say to us, okay, now what I'd like you to do is, for 15 minutes, be extra kind. She says, I know you're kind, but be extra kind. Now, imagine if you introduce this into your life, just once in a while, 15 minutes of extra kindness. The impact that can have on yourself as well as on the beneficiary is remarkable, but beyond that. Because the interesting thing about kindness, and we know this from a lot of research in neuroscience, is that kindness is contagious. In other words, if people experience kindness or observe kindness, they're more likely to be kind themselves.
I'm going to try that. Which it's going to be hard for me because I'm so darn kind.
Are very generous. Yes, you are.
No, I'm teasing, but I am going to. I never thought that you just gave me a concept I never thought of. I always think of being kind and doing it whenever you pause, and it just kind of sort of comes naturally. I never thought to give that kindness a boost. I'm going to do that. Try it.
To me, that's one of the biggest, quickest ways to lifting yourself up, you're lifting somebody else up, and then anybody who witnesses the kind act, the same thing. Like when you watch one of those videos on YouTube of somebody helping somebody in need, and it just warms your heart. Everybody wins by that.
Yeah,
and it's not that hard to do. My gosh, I am loving talking with you. I could talk to you. Listen, not only could I talk to you all day, but I am loving your voice. I am just like, it's so calming. Now I know why all these students sit and listen to you. It's just the content and your cadence and just
you're her Bradley Cooper.
You are my Bradley Cooper. I told you.
Listen, the two of you start singing, I'm out of here.
I came clean in the beginning of the interview. All right. So we're wrapping up here with Tal Ben-Shahar. He is a happiness expert, teaches positive psychology, psychology of leadership at Harvard. He's just come out with his most recent book, Shortcuts to Happiness, Life-Changing Lessons from My Barber. Is there anything that's important for you to share with our listeners that we've not yet addressed? Any parting thoughts that you'd like to leave us with?
Just one last thing. One of the important lessons, I mentioned that Avi was not educated formally. However, he was always learning from conversation and learning from reading and learning from introspection. And there's a lot of research out there today on curiosity and being a lifelong learner. And one thing that he chose is that in order to remain competitive in today's marketplace, in today's world that's changing so fast, we have to be lifelong learners. No less important, to be happy and healthy, we need to learn and continuously learn. Curiosity actually contributes to our physical health and mental health.
Wow. And I believe that because I think the more curious you are, the more perspectives you gain, the more knowledge you gain, and the more you have of that, the more capacity you have to look at situations in different ways or from a bigger standpoint. And if you're limited, your responses are limited as well.
Exactly right.
Oh my gosh, I'm loving talking with you. Okay, we're wrapping up here with Tal Ben-Shahar, author of Shortcuts to Happiness, Life-Changing Lessons from My Barber. Your website is talbenshahar.com. Where can people get your book?
They can get it online or in the nearest store.
Okay, very good. And so is Tal, your website the best way to follow you, get in touch with you? And okay,
yes,
very
absolutely
good.
Get in touch with me and with my barber.
Yeah, very good. Avi, all right, Tal, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all the work that you do.
Thank you.
All right, that was great. That was Tal Ben-Shahar. Thank you again from all of us here at Happy Hour, and we've got more to come, so stick with us. Segment number three is on the way.
This is 92.9 WBPM.
I think I'm blushing.
Live better, laugh harder, love more. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 WBPM. And
And it's happy hour here on 92.9 WBPM. And we've returned for segment number three with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frank and Barry.
Well, that Taliban Shahar was great. I mean, he was, and like you said, just the tenor of his voice, he was just a very comfortable guy. And everything he said is stuff that we have talked about on this show for years, depending on who the guest was at the time. You know, especially with the, you know, that you have to let all of your emotions through that pipeline.
Hard
that
lesson
you have
learned.
In you,
yep.
You know, because otherwise you stunt the others.
Yep. And I will say, if you do go get his book, I listened to the audio version, and it's very quick, because shortcuts is a play on word. It's a shortcut, and he's gaining these pearls of wisdom while he's actually getting his hair cut by his barber.
Yeah.
So it's a double entendre there.
I know you like those entendres.
Yeah, I like those entendres and those segues. But it was really, and there's a ton of lessons in this little book. So it was very well done.
Oh, I'm definitely going to, and I think I usually read books, and I usually like physical books, although if I'm like too impulsive and I have to get it on my Kindle, and I don't usually listen, but I love his voice, I'm going to get the audiobook. So anyway, so speaking of segues.
Yes.
It's interesting that one of the main pieces of that conversation was the role that kindness and generosity plays in our happiness.
And health.
And health as well. I know. It's amazing. So you guys know this, that a few years ago, I was introduced to someone who had this really cool idea who believed in kindness so strongly and had this cool idea for a journal that would document random acts of kindness. So one person, it's called Share This Journal. I ended up connecting with her, and we've now become, and you as well, very, very close friends, Amy Gopel. So her idea was to create this journal where the journal owner writes their name and whatever contact information they're comfortable sharing in the beginning. They go do an act of kindness, and they record that in the book, in the journal. Mm-hmm. And then they leave the journal with the recipient of their kindness. Or leave it behind, like I've left them on the train seat with $10, and I'm saying, hope this makes your day. Mm-hmm. Then that person is instructed to write their reaction and go pay it forward and record it. And then the last act of kindness is to return the journal to the original owner. So we do these kind things. We've all done them. We all believe in it. Mm-hmm. But you never really know the ripple effect of your one kind act. Mm-hmm. And Share This Journal allows you to actually see that. You get the journal back and you see how these people were touched by your singular act of kindness. So that was a few years ago that our book came out. Just this week, we have released a shorter version of Share This Journal called Share This Journal at Work. It's available on Amazon. It's only $6.95. It's designed to follow 7 acts of kindness within the workplace. So you start the book with a coworker, you do something nice, you write it in the book, and you leave the kind act and the book with the recipient. Then they pay it forward to the 7th act, and that person returns the journal to you, and you get to see what.
But it stays in the workplace.
Yeah, it's intended
for. You don't take it outside the workplace.
This one is intended for the workplace.
The acts of kindness stay within the workplace?
Yes.
Okay, so
coworkers.
It's not a situation where you take the book and you give it to Bill and say, Bill, go out and do something nice for somebody and then tell me the story and bring me the book back and then I'll hand this off to Amy.
No, this is intended to promote kindness in the workplace.
Okay, so
and amongst coworkers.
Okay, so you have to like your coworkers.
You have the ability to do something nice for somebody within your circle of people you work with.
So why is it only 7? Is there something significant, or you just decided we're going to put in?
To make it work for smaller workplaces as well, or smaller offices. And I think sometimes when you have more acts, it might take longer to get done. And I think that to increase the chances of that journal getting back, 7 acts, and it's a good number.
Well, you might need a couple of journals in each workplace.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You could get a couple of them going. And the other thing we encourage with the Share This Journal, the original version, as well as Share This Journal at Work, is, and I did this for my father-in-law when he was recovering from a heart attack, you can dedicate the journal in honor of someone who's struggling with something right now, and talk about taking something that's challenging or unfortunate and sending some positive energy out in the world as a result. You can do it in memory of somebody, in honor of somebody, or even to celebrate something. So Share This Journal at Work, and you can get it on Amazon.
I like it.
.com. Yeah, and coming up, so February 17th is Random Act of Kindness Day, and that entire week is Random Act of Kindness Week.
So, really?
Yeah, so timing's good. Get them on Amazon and start spreading them around your workplace.
It's very interesting to have random act of kindness day and week right after Valentine's Day.
It does come right after Valentine's Day.
Hmm, I wonder very what that could mean.
Speaking of what things mean, I had an experience yesterday. I'm a little older than 29, and in my entire more than 29 years, I've never ever seen this in the wild, and it was amazing. Craig went to go walk the dog outside. It was like 8:30 at night. He comes in. He's like, come, hurry up. Like, he didn't even want me to put my shoes on. I was like, hurry up. There was this beautiful, huge owl sitting in a pine tree right outside of our garage, like on a branch that was only like 10, 15 feet in the air, just staring at our house. I have never in my entire life seen an owl in the wild. And he was just sitting there looking at our house. And I was like, it was just felt so special. I just never experienced it. I felt like it was just, it had to be a blessing and wonderful.
A blessing or a sign? Like, it's hard. Like,
it had to be.
We know owls exist, but they, you don't get to see them up close and personal very often.
Not in the wild.
I love that.
Anyway, I thought it was cool. So
that's how I felt when I saw my first eagle.
Bald eagle.
I know.
Wow.
And it's very majestic. And it's, I always think, you should look that up, because there are, I mean, every animal has a spirit. And when certain animals show up in your life, it is for a reason. And if you look up the animal spirits, it'll tell you.
Well, that was the first thing I did. So, in addition to, we all know it stands for wisdom.
Right.
And wealth usually signifies change.
That's good.
And I, I can't imagine a majestic, beautiful, once-in-a-lifetime experience of an owl showing up and having that be a bad thing. That doesn't exist in my realm. It was amazing.
Well, that kind of thing doesn't exist in your realm in general, in the bubble world.
Oh, I'm learning to allow.
Okay. All right.
No, I love that. Now, hopefully, like, maybe his home, like, do they just live? Where do the owls live? Do they just create a little nest?
They live, don't they, like, make nests inside of a tree trunks or something? Like, or am I thinking raccoons of Magic Garden? And the squirrel.
Right, yeah, wait a minute. Oh, no, you know who I'm thinking of? The Tootsie Pop Owl. A one, a two, a three. Crunch.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Kids.
All right, well, that was a good show. Thanks again to Tal Ben-Shahar for sharing his book, his latest book with us and some of the ideas in it. We've got another fantastic guest on the way next week. Jonna Spilbor, Carol Pesci, and myself. This is Happy Hour every week right here, 8 o'clock, 92.9 WBPM. We'll talk to you next Sunday. Take care.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 92.9 WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.